Wait, are we on? Are we not on? Are we live?
We're on, pal. We're live, pal.
We're on, pal. We're live. Hey, what'd you think about, this is specifically for the video folks who are watching us on video. Elon Musk, we need to get Elon Musk to do our next intro video, huh?
He stole it from us. That charlatan, that electric selling charlatan.
Was that like a robot? Who built that robot?
Dude, he built a robot. He has a robot. They're saying it's going to sell for $20,000 and it'll be ready in a couple of years.
It kind of reminded me like an updated version of the Rocky IV robot for Paulie's
birthday.
Well,
there were two, right? They showed two of them. They showed one that was like one that could actually do basic stuff. And the other one was like the actual prototype that it'll kind of resemble that is not very capable of moving right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. All right. So we have a decent amount to talk about. We haven't chit chatted here in a little while. We were not on last week. And this week we have some stuff to talk about. But unfortunately, I'm out of town next week, so we're probably going to have to be dark again next week. But we're going to do a better job at sort of figuring out each other's schedule. And, you know, when you have something to do, then I'll try and figure out a guest host so that we can keep this thing rolling. Because I don't like missing shows. I don't like it when we go dark for the week because it's not good. I want people to feel like they got consistent content from us. So let's actually start with Extreme Rules. I'm kind of interested in this pay-per-view, not from the perspective of I can't wait to watch it. There's so many great things, but from the perspective of WWE feels interesting right now. They feel a little hot, and I wonder what kind of interest is in this show, which is more of a throwaway premium level event than it is one of their big events, right? Because I know Survivor Series is coming. And that I would consider to be probably a bigger show, especially if they're doing War Games. But what do you think about Extreme Rules? Are you interested in this show? Are you kind of digging what they're doing? I think the Fight Pit thing is pretty interesting. But otherwise, like, it feels like a little bit of, if you want to miss something, you can probably miss this one.
Yeah, but you know what, though, Garrett? On paper, it looks really good. You know, like, we've gotten burned plenty of times from this, right? Like, we've seen some really cool match lineups on paper, but then it just falls apart. But, you know, you're looking at this, a Saturday night, I enjoy wrestling a lot more than a Sunday night, I gotta tell you. So I'm going in this a little bit better than a Sunday pay-per-view. But, you know, you look at it on paper, you're like, you got some pretty cool stuff. You got Edge and Finn Balor, you got Bianca and Bayley, you got Drew and Karrion, you got Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins with Daniel Cormier, I'm sure we're going to go into it, Liv and Ronda. The Brawling Brutes versus Imperium. You know, these are all... It's if you're watching WWE programming, this is a great show.
Okay, great from the perspective of... And I think I just screwed up producer John because I had a green screen issue, so I may not be as evenly balanced as I was. But, okay, you say a great show. Is it a great show from a wrestling perspective? Is it a great show from a, this match is buys perspective?
I'm saying because, on paper. You know, like you watch the match perspective, right? You look at these matches, and for a nothing pay-per-view, right, which Extreme Rules generally falls into that category. It's not the big four. It's not the big five. It's not, you know, you don't have an attraction here. But you look at it on paper, I would be... You know, like for me, I'm like, okay, I want to watch this. I'm okay with watching this. I'm, you know, you know how I feel about Raw and WWE programming. I think we all know that all of us were kind of out of it for a while. And the last couple months, they've done a great job at rebuilding and convincing you to watch. And I think they've convinced me to tune into this for sure. Now, will it turn out to be a great show? I have no idea. We've had shows with worse cards than this that have turned into unbelievable shows in the past. But generally, these pay-per-views, when you have the lineup like this, are fine. They're good shows.
Yeah. Now, what is the main event? We have Ronda Rousey and Liv Morgan for the Women's Championship. We have Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins in the Fight Pit match with Daniel Cormier. And I want to get your thoughts on Daniel Cormier in a second. Drew and Karrion Kross feels like an interesting grudge match, but I don't know if I'd put that as the main event because there seems to be a possibility that Karrion Kross could fall on his face a little bit here. But, you know, Drew is one of their best guys, so I'm kind of confident in Drew that we're going to get something good out of this match. But, you know, they've done, you know, what closed Raw last night was damage control, beating up the baby faces, right? So, still don't think, I don't know if Bianca and Bayley in a ladder match is the main event, but it feels like
Bray Wyatt.
Maybe that's the main event, and we'll get to that in a second too. But there's fun matches on this show. I think there will be good matches on this show. I'm just wondering what the hook is, and maybe the hook is the White Rabbit. Maybe that's the entire hook for this show, is that you kind of stay tuned in because you don't want to miss the Bray Wyatt moment, even though the second it happens, it's going to be all over Twitter via WWE's own Twitter. But
sure,
yeah, it looks to me, if they had one more match, and it could be like Roman Reigns versus X, right? Maybe that's the match that's just missing because he's obviously not on the show. But to me, it feels like they have a lot of really good upper mid-card matches, but they're just missing like that one blowaway main event that is really like what I would be, you know, super fired up about.
Yeah, I, you know, like generally when you have like an attraction like a Bray Wyatt debut or whatever, they save that for TV, you know, that it's, I don't want this to be booked like a Raw, but I'm kind of hopeful on this. And a lot of people are excited that I've spoken to that may not be involved in this card. I'm going to go with, you know, on paper, I like it and I want to see what happens. You know, a couple matches that I really want to see is obviously Drew and Karrion, because I think this is more important for Karrion than Drew at this point. It's going to solidify who, you know, what he's going to be able to do on the main roster. Is a strap match the match he should be in for this, you know, first mega match like this? I don't think so. I don't love strap matches. They've done it great in AEW, the last couple that they ran, but historically it doesn't do anything for me.
It's a little smoke and mirrory because I think they understand that this match needs to be good. Now, can they go out and have a one-on-one match with Karrion Kross and deliver the goods? Maybe they think that, you know, let's just make sure that we get something out of this because there's a fear that maybe, you know, it won't be good. So I get that aspect of it. Now, what you're saying is the strap match can often, you know, a no DQ match is probably an easier bet, right? So that you have all the gimmicks and all the stuff to use. And the strap match is a little bit of an interesting one. If you are trying to make sure that Karrion Kross comes out of this thing having a good match. And again, I think Drew is, you know, one of the top five guys or girls or men or women at that company. And he's going to do his very best to make sure that they have a good match. I'm not as convinced in Kross. I think, you know, when he came back, I was like, oh, I like the attempt. But ever since that moment, it has felt lesser and lesser and lesser to me. And so he's got his work cut out for him, right? Like, this is like a put up or shut up for Karrion Kross. And I do wonder if this match isn't good and if the fans aren't super intrigued. I do wonder if Triple H, you know, lays off the gas a little bit on him.
Yeah, I hope Karrion works for sure. I hope a lot of this works. How do you see them doing this match? I'm curious.
Karrion's got to win, right?
If
the idea is he's a possible challenger down the line for Roman, he's got to win. So there's got to be something in there to save Drew a little bit, because you just don't want Drew as, you know, one of your top two or three baby faces in the entire company to just, you know, lose, you know, easily. So, yeah, creatively, I think they got their work cut out for them. Karrion Kross is really going to need to have his best performance in WWE. And, you know, if Drew does get a really good match out of him, this is going to just add more to, you know, the Drew McIntyre is great conversation, because he is fantastic. Like, you've talked about this over the years. Oh, yeah. Like, his moment, unfortunately, was in the pandemic. And if it wasn't, you know, maybe he's a much, much bigger star than he currently is right now.
You know, I saw him, has to be 2016 before he went back there, right? I saw him in Evolve, right? In a small Latin nightclub, maybe like 200-300 people there. He's so big. Like,
yes,
he was getting in that, you know, the smaller ring. He looked larger than the ring. And he's in there with Johnny Gargano, and he's in there with all these guys that are you know, much smaller than him. And just like, I was looking at him like, this guy, how is this guy not signed yet? You know, not back there. He was tremendous. And a guy like that, you know, you get him once in a while. You don't get a Drew McIntyre too often. He's charismatic. He's a handsome guy. He has great hair. Look at those biceps. Look at those triceps. Look at his traps. I mean, he's great.
You're a body guy.
I know the Observer guys hate that, and I don't discourage the guys that aren't. I know it. I see what you guys write to me. I know you guys hate that I'm a body guy, but you have to realize that my don't look at me. My father was a bodybuilder. My grandfather's a bodybuilder. It's engraved in me. But you know, but there is something to be said. A guy like Drew McIntyre, you know, what's more impressive, him, you know, at the size that he is, or him at the size that he was? It's more impressive the size that he is. I mean,
it's a big part of pro wrestling, right? That, you know, I know it doesn't have to be as big of a part of pro wrestling as it was in the past because of, you know, who's in charge. But again, Triple H, you know, he was a huge bodybuilding guy. Like
Danielson's my favorite wrestler. You know, can I just say that? He's not a body guy. He does get a little thick, though. I like it when he's like Danielson's like a little thick and sturdy.
He's just in really good shape. You know, he does train to make sure that he looks good on television. But you can tell he also trains to make sure that inside the ring he can just go
vascular. All right, so muscles.
can we talk about this White Rabbit thing for a little bit? Are you into the clues? Are you like looking forward to the clues and trying to put things together? Like that's the part of it that I don't really care too much about, like putting together the clues, because historically when WWE has done this stuff, the clues are ultimately like not even really important. Like they're just trying to throw you off the scent of tons of different things. So when it comes to the whole thing that, you know, this whole viral campaign and everything, are you into it? Do you think it's working? Does it make people more excited than if whoever it is going to be, Bray, just randomly shows up out of nowhere? Like, what do you think the result of this campaign is going to be?
I would say this is the most detail-based, cryptic thing WWE has ever done. They're really not capable with their writing staff to do something at this level. And then you find out they hired somebody.
Mm-hmm.
To do this, Rob Fee was hired by them, and he started this month. This guy's he's a writer. He's a legitimate writer, and you know, I don't know how great he is, but you know, for something like this, he's really shining. I know that he was involved with them in the past for a couple different ideas, but. I'm not doing the clues, but I'm very intrigued by it, and I applaud them because they've gone into some really nitty gritty detail on how to do this. Mm-hmm. Where normally it's like a dumb vignette, and then you're like, oh well, what is it? What, you know, everybody's speculating if it's Sting debuting.
Yeah,
we've never seen it this detailed. Yeah,
Rob Fee comes from Marvel, I guess. So. This kind of thing, and I get it. Like this kind of thing seems to be more interesting to folks who are kind of into comics and stuff. And I think that's it's fantastic, kind of the layering that they've done with this to get people excited. But I just remember, you know, Chris Jericho save 22 or whatever when he was coming back, and how none of this nonsense meant anything. It was just to throw you off. And this if this proves to be like. Oh, the folks who paid a little bit more attention, they get a bigger payoff, or they feel like, you know, they were in on this whole thing. If that actually works, then I think you can do it periodically, right? You can do it from time to time to help introduce people. But Fee has some pretty good stuff on his resume. So and good hire, it seems like, for WWE.
Yeah. And it looks like Alexa's involved in this somehow, because last night there was, you know, there was that moment with Alexa backstage, and on top of her, it was like a silhouette of like Bray of the Fiend, or like a mon. Like it kind of looked like it, you know. And the lights went off when she was there. So they've teased this. One interesting thing was if you went down that rabbit hole, obviously,
the white rabbit hole,
the white rabbit hole. Now it makes sense why they're having you go down a rabbit hole, right? It said Gacy at one point.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's like John Wayne Gacy. Because he was a clown. Wasn't he a clown?
John Wayne Gacy. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
John Wayne Gacy was this overweight clown with like makeup on. Or are they referring to...
He's the serial killer, right?
Yes. Yeah, the serial killer. Or are they referring to Joe Gacy?
I would hope that they're referring to Joe Gacy and not a former serial killer.
Oh, no. I'm hoping they're referring to John Wayne Gacy, because I don't want this to be Joe Gacy. I want this to be
Yeah, I agree with you. Joe Gacy's not my favorite character. But I don't know. Serial killers are like super popular right now. Like the top show on Netflix is the Jeffrey Dahmer show that is out there. It's like people are just super into that thing. I haven't watched it yet. But
you know what's wild? There's a whole generation. Like, we grew up with that, right? Like, we grew up with the John Wayne Gacy stories. And
the Night
Menendez
Stalker
brothers,
was the one for me.
The Night Stalker.
Do you remember the Night Stalker? Hey, listen.
So, I know of the Night Stalker, but, you know, like, we had, you know, there was Zodiac, obviously. Yes. But we had ours. We had the Summer of Sam.
Yes.
Shooting happened that not was... too far from me. Like, very close to me.
Yeah, the Night Stalker was... the one for me, I think his name was Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, Richard Ramirez, a Night Stalker. I'm very into this stuff.
He was California, like he was like SoCal, and then he came to Northern California. But I think at some point he had to like retreat from Northern California. I don't exactly remember the story, but I just remember like following the news and going like, oh, where's the Night Stalker these days? Because is he going to be close to us? Because if he's close to us, then I'm going to be freaked out for the entire night because, you know, what a name, the Night Stalker. So I do want to apologize.
I was wrong. The Menendez brothers were not serial killers. They just killed their parents. They were just spoiled. Yes. Yeah, they were spoiled brats that murdered their parents.
You want some Menendez brothers trivia? Do you remember... NBA Hoops trading cards from you were probably really young. There's
Do
a
I need
game.
To show you my NBA Hoops trading cards because they're all behind me. All my basketball trading cards are literally right behind me.
I forget which player it is, but there's a card where sitting in the front row are the Menendez brothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of a Knicks game or Lakers game?
I don't remember, but I'm assuming
it was one or the other. Yeah, yeah, no, I remember that. It was one or the other.
Yeah. Okay, so. If it's Bray, which we all assume it's going to be Bray, I think that initial pop is going to be nuts. But you know what I'm really worried about with Bray is what happens after that. Because he has historically been a guy who has been hard to book, I would say, and has left his opponent in worse shape than before the matches with him. And does he come back as the Fiend? Does he come back as Bray? Is he going to be both? Are we going to see more cartoonish puppet stuff? Like, what do you do with him when you actually bring him back? Because that's the story to me, which is, I think it's great. He's going to get that pop. People are going to be so excited. But then what's the character going to be like? Because some of the reason why Raw was so terrible in the years that you were talking about, some of that stuff was him and his character. Like, a lot of that stuff was really nonsensical. I know a lot of people really dug it, but for a wrestling show, that stuff did not move, and I was not interested in seeing his matches. I don't know. I'm kind of interested, like, where do you go with him after that initial pop?
He's damned if he does, and he's damned if he doesn't, really, because his character... I mean, the Fiend character, right? I don't know what they're going to do now. Maybe they'll humanize him a little bit. Maybe he'll... I don't know. But the previous character was very difficult to work with because he's an undead, right? He has powers. He sent John Cena to the void and you never saw him again. Or you did, actually. You did see John Cena again, right? He wrestled SummerSlam. Can I tell you something? A little sidebar here. Seeing John Cena wrestle did nothing for me.
Really?
And it one of those weird moments, man. And I haven't really seen too much John Cena. Like, I really, like, live, I've only seen Cena, like, three times.
Mm-hmm.
Did
so do you was it because your wrestling fandom was a lot less when he was on top? Is that what it was?
No, I think it's like a generational. Maybe. You know what? Quite possible, because the Benoit stuff took me out of it for a little bit. But
yeah,
even like it just seeing him, you know, like it just I've never connected to the character. Like I get why people love him, but I also think it's like a generational thing. Like he was not my Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was my Hulk Hogan.
Sure.
Warrior was the guy. Hogan was the guy. Savage was the guy. I never had that with him. So I thought it was interesting. It just did nothing for me when I saw him.
I get it. And I think a lot of people were like that. But where Cena did it for me was, you know, my kids were pretty young at that point. When Cena finally is on top, my kids are like 5 and 6. So, you know, they were into him and they were into Ray. And so while the creative and where Vince was going with a lot of that stuff, I think he should be super grateful that he had John Cena, because some of that other stuff that they were doing, if you don't have a John Cena and you don't have a Batista, man, Triple H,
you think so that whole time?
Yeah,
if OVW never happened, that OVW class never happened, it would just be Hunter on top till 2014.
Well, I mean, that's what happened, right? They tried Orton, and then it didn't do it. And so then who beats Orton? Well, it's Triple H. But Batista, you know, Batista stood out. Like, Batista's kind of like this underrated figure in keeping, you know, the WWE going strong. Because he was unique. He was not as babyface as John Cena was. There was a little bit more edge to him. But like it would just have been Triple H, because, you know, whenever something happened and they needed to go to somebody, it's like, oh, Triple H, he's main eventing WrestleMania 25. And I'm just like, oh, my God. So I guess the last thing here is this Daniel Cormier from UFC. He's a former champion, one of the great fighters in UFC history. And he's still their color analyst for pay-per-views and big shows. But he is going to referee the pit fight match between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle. And I have to imagine that this is not just a one-off. He's just the celebrity referee. I have to imagine they're either building him up for Brock Lesnar or maybe even Seth Rollins down the line, because he did in his little video package interview, or his supposedly live interview last night, say that he was in the building rooting for Seth when Seth won the title at WrestleMania 31. So do you expect business them to start doing business with Cormier based off of this match?
I'm curious where they're leading to with this. I mean, okay, does this lead to Cormier having a match in Saudi Arabia?
That's interesting. I was thinking WrestleMania, but I always think WrestleMania. But yeah, we have to think almost first Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
but I mean, okay. So
what do you do with Daniel Cormier? 43 years old, super talented. I don't know what his in-ring training has been. I don't know if he's had any, but everybody knows how dominant he is from MMA and the UFC. Great talker. There was a lot of talk years ago that he was interested in becoming a commentator for WWE. Mm-hmm. People thought he would jump ship.
Fox. He's great. Fox wanted him.
Fox wanted him. Yeah, but that's what it was. Yeah, Fox wanted him. Of course Fox would want him. He's fantastic. He's a very easy, likable guy. And he's also a tremendous fighter. So I don't know. I think this is going to be maybe something a little bit more than just a one-off. I can't imagine they get Daniel Cormier there. And how does it end? He knocks someone out at the end and then he just disappears?
So the one thing that's intriguing to me revolves around Brock Lesnar, because one of the most WWE things that happened inside of a UFC ring in recent memory was Cormier. I think Cormier won a fight. Brock Lesnar crashes the ring.
Yes.
And Brock Lesnar two hand shoves Daniel Cormier, like, and he
Cormier
flies.
Goes back.
Yeah. And so I remember the quotes coming out of that where Cormier was like, yeah, man, Brock Lesnar that just means like, you know, your Christmas bonus came, or he said something like that, meaning, you know, Brock Lesnar's money. Like if this fight happens, Daniel Cormier is making way more money than if he just faced a random, you know, contender, probably even more than the John Jones fight, because, you know, Brock meant money. So there's something there to where people are saying, you know, maybe they do the fight that they never had. They do it in the wrestling ring. That's quite a size difference, though, because Brock Lesnar's a giant compared to Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier is also, you know, we're talking about the body guys. He's not a body guy himself. So the ring attire will be interesting. Maybe he goes to the wrestling singlet or something. But oh, I like
one Daniel- singlet, one arm, just one arm, the singlet.
I like him a lot, but I know that his personality doesn't really come across to everybody as like bigger than life. And some of that is probably because he's now a commentator and we see him every week. But yeah, he's probably one of those guys like in between like giant star and, you know, worker bee in the UFC. Like he was right on the cusp. If he had beaten John Jones in one of those fights, I think he would have gone to a much bigger level than he was, but still, he was still a big star when the UFC was hot and making money and having big fights. So I think it's great. I love the crossover, but I also want them to do the crossover correctly. And a lot of times, because it's pro wrestling, they lean a little bit too much into the pro wrestling and not enough into the kind of like the realness stuff. But then again, we have Ronda killing everybody and being a giant babyface because of it. So like that stuff works as well. And so that's the intriguing thing to me is I want to see what they do with him. And I would love to see him and Brock, because Brock doesn't really have a dance partner right now, right? Like we don't want to see him face Roman again. Like there's no reason to.
Oh, it's going
to
be him and Roman for like the 80th time. I mean, I'm convinced that we're going to see this another like 14 times in our lifetimes. Brock would be the smart answer for sure. I think that would be the attraction.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of AEW, because they're on their third anniversary of Dynamite. And I know you probably remember where you were when Dynamite debuted in 2019. I think I watched it at Dave's house. I was like,
I did a watch along.
Oh, did you? There you go.
Yeah, we were live.
You were live, pal. Yeah, that was a pretty memorable moment, though, because it was kind of like, you know, the idea of AEW and the genesis of it, you know, me being close to Dave, like, you know, he had all of these little nuggets about what was going on. And so I feel like I was like at the beginning of this whole thing and just seeing it come to fruition and that show coming on TV and, you know, TNT and wow, this is kind of the big, you know, this is a big league for the second promotion in wrestling. And it was just, you know, where it's gone, you know, now 4 years later is pretty
very
cool.
Interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting to see the change of this show. You know, a lot of positive changes for sure, a lot of maturity, but also if you ask a lot of people, a lot of negatives also.
And it's just not as hot as it once was, right? Like, you know, we look at the ticket sales, and that's kind of what I know that Dave leans toward ticket sales as sort of the indicator of where things are hot or not. I know he believes historically that it's kind of the best one to use rather than TV ratings, because TV ratings
seem to be, I agree with him on that.
Yeah, behind a little bit. But
I'll tell you why. TNA is a great example of that. Million and a half people watching TNA. They couldn't draw more than three. I mean, could they have done 1,000 people consistently every week for TV? I don't know. I don't think so. They would have done it if they could. They probably not. They were doing 300, 200 people a week for the TV taping. So it's a great example. TV's easy. If, you know, you could get, you know, 500,000 viewers easily on television, or 1 million, depending on people viewing. But to drag people out of their homes to drive, to go to an arena, to sit there for 3 hours and watch a program, you know, that's getting the most dedicated of the fans to go. And if you're cooling off, this is how you see it. This is the first indicator.
Yeah, this West Coast swing that they do whenever it happens next year, you know, it's an untapped market for them, right? And they've withheld coming out this way for the longest time, and they've done a lot of the same markets over and over and over. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, they're back in D.C., and I don't know what the number is. I haven't looked at WrestleTix of late, but you know, as of last week, it wasn't that impressive. And you're thinking like, man, you know, for an anniversary show, and it just doesn't seem to be like that big important thing anymore, that hot thing during the week. So when it comes to sort of the hotness and the coldness of wrestling, I was interested in what you thought about some of the reasons, and because I was thinking about this, at you know, John LaRocca and I do the AEW Dynamite review like pretty much immediately after the West Coast airing is done, so it's very fresh in our minds. You know, you can check it out, the Fight Game podcast, anywhere you listen to podcasts, and I kind of watch it. Dynamite in a very critical way, because we have to talk about some things. Like, you can't just watch a wrestling show and go, segment one, great, love the match, move on. Like, you really have to critique it and dig in and analyze it. And a lot of people are just like, oh, you guys are nitpicking, and you're nitpicking. Well, like, that's kind of the show. That's the reason why we do it. But when I was looking at this lineup, and I'll pull it up here, the lineup features for an anniversary show. I was kind of thinking, like, what is the big push for this thing? What is the big match? And I think they believe it's the Bryan Danielson and Daniel Garcia versus Jericho and Guevara. And then maybe right there, maybe slightly below, is the MJF versus Wheeler Yuta match. And if you were to tell me that AEW, like, let's say the AEW was running the Bay Area, you know, multiple times a year, like let's say we get six shows in the Bay Area, and that's the lineup that you are trying to sell me on to buy a ticket on a Wednesday night, that might be one where I'm like, you know what, I think I might just watch this one at home. You know, I get some sleep. You know, I got a meeting Thursday morning. I'm not gonna, you know, kind of push myself for this show. And I feel like they've kind of gotten away from really making some of this stuff feel important. Like, on one end, it is a consistent weekly show. You can't blow everything up to make it the biggest thing ever, because then if it's not the biggest thing ever, then fans are like, okay, like you're not telling the truth. I just think a show like this is kind of missing something that would make me go, wow, I cannot wait to watch that AEW anniversary show. I don't know, Wardlow and Brian Cage, like we haven't seen Brian Cage in forever. Like, how is that interesting unless you're just someone who believes Brian Cage, it has something, it has potential, but he's there for Wardlow to beat up a guy. But I don't know. There's nobody right now. And I say that knowing, and people know that, you know, I used to do a podcast every once in a while with John Moxley. Like that, I love seeing John Moxley. And I'll watch his segment every time. I get a lot of joy. And like you said, Bryan Danielson's also my favorite wrestler. So I'm not going to say no to watching that match, because the match is going to be good. But I'm just not sure what that hook is for this show, other than you're going to get the normal amount of people watching who always watch because they love AEW. There's something missing for me this week, and I probably have felt like that a lot more recently. But then they had the Arthur Ashe show, which felt big. Like, that felt big. So I guess
but that was also short. Also, it felt big. Yeah. But Garrett, you know, let's be honest, they were short by 6,000 people.
Yeah, from the last time.
And listen, a lot of my honest answer is, and this is what I believe is happening. One, it's not, you know, fatigue is set in. The honeymoon's over. And that's the reality. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how things are. People, you know, they've had a tremendous 3-year run, and they're still a great company, and it's still great wrestling. But the same level of excitement year one is not going to be there year three. Also, personally, for me, and this is really how I honestly feel, the whole Kenny and the Bucks and the Punk stuff, like, we could joke about it, but it took something out of me. It really did. And as someone that covers this, like, I'll still watch it, but there are a lot of people that are annoyed at this whole thing. You know, yes, you've invested time, you've invested your viewership, your viewer hours, you've invested into this company, and it's one after another. You know, I'll give you a great example. The Sammy Callahan. Wow, wrong Sammy. Sammy Guevara. Wow, where did I go, Sammy? Where is Sammy Callahan? That's weird.
I think he was hurt. He was hurt for a bit, but I think he's back, or he's coming back, on his way back.
It's weird. Sammy, I'm not even reading Sammy Callahan. It just came out.
You know, funny Sami Callihan story is I was talking to emailing with Moxley, and he was supposed to have a match with Sami Callihan. And I had to break the news to Moxley that Sami Callihan had like broke his leg or whatever it was. And he was going to be out. And he's like, what the F? Because he didn't know. And so it's, that's just, you know, the news of what we do is, you know, we get this stuff so quickly, even before the talent.
I got too much impact on my brain. That's the problem.
You no, but you were about to say Sami Guevara and Andrade, this drama that's happening on Twitter.
I have to tell you, if it annoyed the shit out of me when I saw it, right? Like, I was like, no, guys, come on. Like, if it's a work, right? If it's a work, and I hope it is. I hope I don't like seeing
it's a bad work if it is.
It's bad because the timing, like, I'm exhausted, and I think most of the viewers are exhausted of the fighting. Like the sidebar fighting that's happening, you know, and you're seeing it with, you know, like the MJF stuff. Like he did it. He said something about he'll never wrestle Eddie Kingston, you know, that slob or something. Like, okay, you know what? They're working. That doesn't bother me. But, you know, I do want to see Andrade more on TV. I am a fan of Andrade's. And, you know, like this kind of adds more to the conversation of, you know, their guys went there. They're unhappy. They're not in the position they thought they'd be in, whether or not it's true or not. You know, it's the overall perception. So when you have these tweets happen, right, it is, oh, wow, is it real? Is it not real? Is the thing that intrigues you. Is it real does not intrigue me whatsoever with this, because it did happen and it was real when it did happen. And we saw the outcome. They lost four of their top stars in the company.
Yep.
One, like literally 1, 2, 3, and 4. It could be 1, 2, 3, and 4 on a number of people's lists. Kenny Omega not being there bugs the crap out of me. It really bothers me. CM Punk having, you know, losing his mind and then that whole fight. Really bugs me. The Bucks not being there really bugs me. So
yeah, okay. So here's the thing where I think if I knew either of these
again, Tony, I'm not mad at you, Tony. I'm not yelling at Tony. No, I'm not mad at AEW. Tony, no. I'm just
that. So if I knew either of these guys, I think the thing that I would tell them is bad timing. We just went through this. Your boss on live camera looked terrible because CM Punk went into business for himself. And so now we get this little Twitter war, and I'm not blaming people here, right? But the fact that Sami Guevara seems to be in all of these little wars is not a good look for him. But really, it's like, guys, we don't need to see this because we just saw it and it hasn't helped your business in any way. Now, if they believe that maybe the attention is not bad for them, I sort of get that, because wrestlers are still, you know, the independent contractors, and you know, they're trying to create their own business or whatever. Yeah. But it just looks bad, because ultimately, if we believe that the internet fan is so much more a part of the overall fan base in wrestling today, especially with AEW, that internet fan looks at the CM Punk situation and goes, huh, he's supposed to be a good guy, but the reality is maybe he's not that good of a guy. I'm not even laying blame here. I'm just saying that that's what the perspective is. That's what it looks like, the optics. I'll use one of your words, the optics of that. And so then, whether you're an Andrade fan or Sami Guevara fan, the thing that I see out of it, and I'm going to quote the great MVP, and, you know, we don't really curse on this show, but I'll make an exception here. MVP tweeted. MVP tweeted to no one in particular, bitch assery is rampant, right? And so that's what it looks like to fans. It doesn't look like
it does.
Yeah. Oh, Sammy and Andrade are having a tiff. It just looks like they're both assholes. Like, that's how it comes across.
Ricky wrote something and deleted it also. He wrote, man, can my coworker shut the fuck up for a minute?
Right. Because like, if you are supposed to be,
you know, this is urgency. This is all hands on deck, right? Like, I think a lot of people realize that in AEW, that, okay, it was funny, it was fun, you know, the back and forth, like, you're a WWE guy, you're here for the money, like, that was fun. I shouldn't say anybody, right? I'm trying to do better with generalizations this year. That was a thing.
Yes.
Thing that I've tried You know, when you're doing a show, you kind of like to generalize and you got like to kind of make things bigger. But
because if you go into specifics, then you kind of say things that maybe you're not supposed to say. And
Yeah. I don't know, man. It just it's a turnoff for me. It really is, because you're taking me out of the show. Now you're making it seem like you guys really don't like each other. And that doesn't help me. That doesn't make me want to watch more.
Exactly. It makes you feel like, why do I want to watch these guys? You know, they're not.
It's almost disrespectful. Like, I find it that they're disrespecting the company that they're in, you know, and that's what bothers me the most. Listen, I deal with tremendous staff issues, right? with my
Are
clients.
You saying you this also deal with bitch assery?
I deal with a ton of bitch assery from independent contractors regularly. It's just every work environment, right? But most jobs have the curtain over them where it doesn't leak into the public. You don't have people poking and asking questions 5,000 times a day. They are in the limelight. There's a lot of attention on the company. There has to be some sort of, if you guys keep doing this, you're done. Right? If you guys keep arguing, unless it's all, you know, it's all part of the Tony's big, you know, blending of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the direction that they're going in. I don't know. More,
you would know more about this than I would, but what kind of leeway does WWE talent have with their social media accounts? Because I've seen Seth reply to certain things where I was like, there was a little edge to that. Like maybe that was the real guy, not the Seth Rollins character. But for the most part, like those guys and the men and women in WWE, they're almost only promotional, and you very rarely see them, you know, go off the script to say with their social accounts. And for this reason, is I'm sure.
Listen, this is exactly why WWE is so controlling. A lot of those guys are afraid to post stuff, right? And that's a reality. The difference in the locker rooms is that there are so many different protocols and procedures in WWE. I mean, they are structured very differently than AEW is, and they should be. And this is not a knock at AEW. AEW is 3 years old. Literally 3 years old tomorrow. A lot of these scenarios have not been put in place, and it's not Tony's fault. These are all learning things. You know, you don't want to start restricting and regulating from the beginning, but I think it's time that Tony has a conversation and tells people to shut the F up at this point, you know, or else there's going to be severe consequences. Again, how is that conversation not had? Did it happen? Did it not? Are they going to implement something where this doesn't happen? This is, it's too much infighting, but a lot of the same people.
Yes. Specifically one person who we know.
Specifically one person.
A part of a lot of these
stories.
Listen,
I don't know Sammy Guevara. So I don't, I hope this is all part of a work and they're all cool and they're just trying to blur the line a little bit to get more conversation. Because guess what? We spent 15 minutes on this or 10 minutes, whatever we did. We would not be talking about Sammy or Andrade if they had not done that tweet. So we fell into it, I guess.
And you know what? Tony should have ratioed the tweet. He should have replied to both of them and go, don't forget to watch AEW Dynamite's third anniversary show, and made that the tweet that goes viral, not their tweets. Okay, so there's this other funky story that I figured you would be the best person to talk about this with, which is Dave Portnoy, who he used to be the CEO of Barstool, right? He's no longer, or he used to be the founder or whatever, and he sold it. Is that correct?
No, he's still the main guy there.
Okay. I was trying to figure out what his role was. So he tweeted, somebody was discussing Tony Khan and he retweeted it as if Nick Khan did something to him that was very negative. And then Tony Khan then tried to ratio that tweet. But that was so hilarious to me because it was like kind of an inside joke between wrestling fans, right? Because Tony Khan did the thing when he was on Impact about, you know, one con in this business or whatever he said, I forgot. But like, it's kind of a thing where you have two of the most powerful people in wrestling, both have the same last name. And I wonder why people don't get that wrong, you know, more often than not. Or maybe they do, and Tony Khan just doesn't retweet it to change the narrative a little bit. But well, what did you think about Dave Portnoy confusing the great Nick Khan with the great Tony Khan?
So I was very confused by the tweet because I'm reading it and it's like, you got my show canceled. and then you invited me to sit next to you at UFC. And I'm like, who's he talking about? And then it clicked. Nick was at ESPN at that time.
Yeah.
And he canceled that Barstool. Remember? And to be honest, that was the best thing that ever happened to Barstool, getting canceled after one show, right?
Yeah.
Because they blew the hell up. It exploded. It was a great stunt. I guess you would call it a stunt at this point, but it was great for them for business, and they did tremendous. And you know, Barstool's a big New York property, a Boston property, Philly property. I see Barstool flags all around Manhattan. Mm-hmm. You know, people are very into this. It's a very different way that they cover sports, and it's tapping into a market that was unheard, I guess, or they didn't have a venue for. I thought it was hysterical, but I believe Portnoy apologized after, right? He was like, oh, crap, okay. You know, he said something like that, which, whatever, you know, it's good for Tony. You know, he has that Barstool thing going. So, and by the way, Robbie, the sweetest boy in the world, interviewed Tony.
Right.
My good friend, Tony Khan, right? My good friend. We're DMing. I'm so fond of Rob and everything he does. Robbie's fantastic at Barstool. Great guy. You know, seeing him, you know, all over the internet the last 2 days with this Portnoy mix up was fantastic.
So I'm gonna read what Tony said when they corrected Dave Portnoy. He said, two more different people we could not be. So that's a shot at Nick Khan. And do you think, you know, I'm just guessing the meaning behind the meaning, but obviously Nick Khan is with WWE. He's the co CEO. But do you think he said that, or he made it a point, because he could have just let that go? He made it a point to point out Nick Khan. Do you think that's related to the tampering stuff that they were dealing with? Or just that it's this AEW versus WWE? Because Tony doesn't, you know, sometimes he'll get cheeky with comments, but to kind of point out that he and Nick Khan are two more different people could not be. I wonder what was the intention behind that line.
I think it was the AEW versus WWE thing, but I would love to see
more
Freaky Friday situation happen.
Yeah,
I want to see that. I want to see the wrong Khan. You know, they bump into each other at like the Sports Business Awards or whatever, and all of a sudden Tony becomes Nick and Nick becomes Tony. What happens? Nick turns Dynamite into a 4-hour show on TBS. You know, I'd like to see all these little Freaky Friday situations happen. I don't think it was like a personal. I think he was just playing online.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of what I was hoping it was. But okay. So you know how AEW likes to take things that are kind of happening and turn them into wrestling angles, like the Matt Hardy with the private party about them still being under contract to Andrade, but he's kind of talking to them. What if? I don't know who this could be, and I'm not saying let's do this, but I think I would laugh the first time. What if on, you know, the next time Will Hobbs has a match where you want him to just beat up a smaller person, what if that guy's name is Nick Con, is his wrestling name, and Will
they
Hobbs
start
just
doing
demolishes
that?
I love this guy. That's kind of like,
yeah, it's like when WCW had the Hogan, the fake Hogan, right?
Well, even do you remember, I think it was Universal, so UWF, I think it was the Herb Abrams UWF. They had a jobber named Davey the Observer.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Yeah, Davey the Observer. Herb Abrams, he died. He died in a blaze of glory.
Blaze of glory, geez.
Coked up in the New Yorker. with Vaseline all over him, allegedly, you know, that's the rumor. And
Dark Side, man.
Women of the night.
They covered him in the Dark Side.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so last thing, I kind of want to talk about this a little bit, just because it's coming on this week. I'm actually interested in your, if you're going to watch the Tales from the Territories because Dave and I interviewed Evan, one of the executive producers.
Fantastic interview, by the way. Very much enjoyed that show. Very much enjoyed that interview with him. Yeah,
he's really good at that stuff. Both times, you know, he's very conversational. I think a lot of people really like that about him. But is that something that is up your alley, or do we have too much wrestling for you to pay attention to? Are you gonna set aside
I'm into
the
that.
1 hour every week? Yeah.
I'm into this stuff. I'm into the territory. It's funny, you know. I don't know if you know Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan subs in on Observer Live with me every couple of weeks, and he runs Catalyst Wrestling. Him and I were working on a very similar concept where we pick a territory over X amount of weeks and we deep dive into it and we talk about certain events that happen in the territory that may have, you know, helped them in the long run or hurt them, you know, like key moments for them. And we were talking about doing like Mid-South and doing, you know, AWA and all that stuff. You know, it's just so difficult to put together, but I love the history of wrestling. More than, you know, I like the older history more than the modern history, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm more intrigued in it because I didn't live through those eras.
Yeah, but we didn't watch it.
I it depends on how it's done. I think it could become very successful. It could be a very interesting show. I'm curious, did they list what the episodes are going to be each week?
They've only put out the first three, but when we talked to Evan, he mentioned the other territories that were going to be covered. I think it's very smart for them to have these two different brands. You get the Dark Side, and then you have the Tales from the Territory. They're similar enough to where you're like, okay, the same people are kind of working on these shows the way that it's produced and put together. But the tone and the information and the things that are covered are different enough to where I think there can be two established shows on Vice, and I hope that that this one does really well, because I'm interested to see like how many territories can you continue to do. But Evan, when we talked to him, he thought, well, you know, we just go back to some of them because there's so many stories for every territory. And then do you go back to the WWWF and who's kind of alive from you know, the 70s of WWWF? Who could have those stories? So then that gets really intriguing. And from what he didn't necessarily say this, but from what I gauged, Vince McMahon not being there is probably going to be better for them to be able to talk to certain people and maybe
in
even
WWE,
with,
you think?
With coverage, even with coverage as far as, because he mentioned, you know, they were the only way they could do Memphis was if they could get Jerry Lawler. And it sounded like they had to go through WWE to get Jerry Lawler. Michael P.S. Hayes is on one of them, and it sounded like they had to go through WWE to get through Michael to get Michael P.S. Hayes as well. So it's possible that this stuff started before, and I may be blaming Vince for something.
I'm surprised.
That he deserves no blame.
So when that Flair episode came out for Dark Side of the Ring, you know, we spoke about it obviously on Madman. We spoke about it here. I've heard that story for 20 something years, and so have you. You know, there's been 5,000 shoot interviews with that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There were a lot of people within WWE that felt blindsided by that episode and how negative. Well, it wasn't the story. It was how the story was presented, because historically that story was presented in the most laughing way. Oh, yes. And then he cut his hair, and then he peed next to Linda, and then Flair disrobed, and you know, like, it's always been done as like, well, you know, this is what it's like with athletes. And then Dark Side presents it in a very different light, and they present it in a way more serious manner. And the people I know, a lot of people that have participated in that series said that they would never do it again. I know people within WWE felt they were I'm not bringing up anybody specifically that was on the show. But people that have been or would be asked to come on said they would never do it again because they don't trust them. So I guess they made right by them. I guess Dwayne being involved too has helped.
Yeah, I'm sure that helps. I have a retort to that though, because often when your history is ugly, one of the ways to make it less ugly is to joke about it or make light
of course.
About it.
Yeah.
Right? There are people who dealt with those flights who probably felt like they couldn't come forward to speak about what was going on there Terry Runnels was one of them.
I wouldn't want to be on that flight, would you?
No, no.
I would God, not no. Be on that flight.
And I know the Terry Runnels thing happened, I believe it happened on a different flight, but, you know, that episode allowed people to kind of come out and say, yeah, 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 to these guys, it was fun and games, but to us, it was not. And so, you know, you kind of have to deal with your history and grow from it and make sure that that stuff doesn't happen again, because that's really the lesson, right? Is I don't think that there are flights like that that are still happening, but if there are, or if there were, that should be the wake-up call to be like, okay, we can't do that. And same with, yeah, you know, same with Vince, all the stuff happening to Vince, like that's the wake-up call to like clean up, you know, your corporate office there, guys. Like this stuff is, you know, it should never happen. And it's still happening, like make it stop.
But it's amazing, right? The reaction wasn't, oh man, you know what? This was really bad.
Like, this, right.
It wasn't that. It was,
oh, it's
going
to be so entertaining.
How dare they do this to us?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, and listen, I don't think a lot of people, like, didn't JR say he's not going to do it?
I think he's going to be involved in the territories thing, though.
I know a lot of people had said, I could be wrong about JR. I just have a memory of that. Listen, man, I love the original series. Dark Side of the Ring was a great series. Mm-hmm. My wife got into it. The Von Erich story is still one of the sad. I get goosebumps when I talk about it because it's a very sad story of this family that essentially wrestling destroyed. You know, it was their career. But at the end of the day, the path that they went on was wrestling. And it caused everybody to die. And it's so sad. And you hear those stories. The Brian Pillman one is another one.
The Grizzly Smith one is the Grizzly. Like that's the perfect name.
You know
him,
what?
Man.
I can't rewatch that one. It's so disturbing.
I would never.
Right? Very disturbing.
I remember reading that story years and years and years ago. I don't even remember what book it was, but I was just like, oh my gosh, that is a terrible.
I mean, I forgot who told me this, but I guess it was an interview or something. Everybody knew openly what the situation was with him. And he was still working in WCW. Like nobody, everybody in the industry knew. Like it wasn't a big secret, but yet you turn a blind eye to somebody like that. You know, now, luckily, 30 some odd years or 40, 50 years later, we've evolved. And things like that, you know, someone will call you out on it, but wild stuff, man.
Yeah.
We're getting yelled at, by the way. Lance is wrapping up. We also have a super chat. I don't know if you saw this.
No,
Ryan Martin hit us with a $10 super chat. He said,
Ryan,
we answered this, but let's give him like a minute. Thoughts on the hire of Rob Fee as director of long-term creative, which, again, continuity, right? Wasn't this Chris Christie? Not the governor, not the guy on...
You're talking about the guy from the early 2000s. Chris Christie.
Yeah, the guy from the early 2000s. Chris Christie. Yeah, Chris Christie. Yeah. There you go. Chris Kresge was actually good friends with my wife's cousin because my wife's cousin was a creator of Celebrity Deathmatch and they worked on the show together.
And you know who replaced Chris Kresge?
Who did?
Stephanie McMahon.
Stephanie McMahon, yeah. And continuity went out the window.
So I just hope that they give him some freedom to kind of do some things like this, because the benefit to having someone from outside of wrestling is like, well, I know you guys do it this way, but how about we try it this way? And if Triple H is going to be open to that, to have a creative guy like that, and he like his resume is great. You look at it; it's on the website. The articles on F4W. He worked on the Fresh Prince reunion show, which just came out. I think it was last year, which was awesome. So he's got like real credentials, and to bring that into wrestling, if Triple H is going to be open to hearing ideas to doing
that's
new
what's
things,
going to come down to.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's really who the top boss is going to listen to, though. So that will be the most important thing, I think.
Yeah, this is going also, by the way, this is going back to what they had thought about doing when they went to SmackDown. When they went to Fox on SmackDown, this was part of their idea. They would have these like actual writers come in. And after, I don't know, like 6 months, these writers wanted to, you know, jump off the bridge. They didn't want to be there.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it up. We want to give Lance his full hour of Q&A. So for Andrew, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.